the day before the Joint Finance Committee begins voting on the 2015-2017 budget is a perfect day to have newsmakers interview with the co-chairs of the Finance Committee, Senator Alberta Darling, Representative John Nygren. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Can I just go down some of the major issues?
Sure.
I want to respect your time. You've got assembly session a little bit. Let's start with the Bucks Arena. The latest the Bucks Arena, the latest proposal. You've seen the gleaming architect drawings and everything. Senator Fitzgerald's proposal to use up to $150 million loan or bond sale from the public lands. Do both of you like that idea? Is it a better idea than the governor's opening bid?
Well, I think we're going to hold our powder, at least I am. I'm going to support Senator Fitzgerald, but I think we really need the city and the county to step up before we start talking any state commitment. I mean, that's my point of view, John. I think you agree.
Well, I'm from northern Wisconsin. You know, when you get outside the, you know, three or four county area of Milwaukee, it's questionable what type of impact the Bucks Arena has on the state. So, of course, you know, I come to it with a amount of skepticism. And I think the Senator Fitzgerald's proposal is a step in the right direction. It reduces overall bonding costs quite a bit, and it reduces the original principal quite a bit. So I think that's headed in the right direction. The most recent announcement of another $500 million of investment locally should spur
around the arena.
It should spur Milwaukee, the city of, and the county to come to the table with a aggressive offer. If you look at the past few arenas that have been built throughout the state, the city is and the county are major players in most of those developments.
If the arena just itself costs $500 million and the Commission of Public Lands is in for $150, how much should the city and county total share be? What are your thoughts on that? How much should they ante up?
I don't want to start putting boxes around the state, the county, or the city. I think we need to make this happen, but I think the city and the county need to really step up because the greatest benefit will be to the city and the county. And I think it's a fabulous opportunity, not only for the arena itself, because they're saying it's not just the arena, it's all the development around.
Right.
And that area is a blighted area that really needs help. Look at what's going on the river and on Water Street. The parts of Milwaukee and are booming and are doing really well, but this part of the city is really struggling. And so I think it's a great opportunity for us to make a whole new look to the city of Milwaukee.
Is it fair to say, just a quick follow-up, that you don't think city and county have put enough money on the table yet to do this deal?
I think we heard the city step up with $25 million, and that's I don't believe there's any cash. I think it was infrastructure.
Right. Exactly.
The parking garage.
The
parking
garage,
for the most part. I mean, if you just simply do the math, if the owners and previous owner do $250 and the state steps up with $150, you know, there's a little bit of a hole there left to fill, and I think that hole needs to be filled locally, not at the state level. I think the assembly is firm on the position that we are at right now.
Just a last follow-up. Pretty quick, pretty tough sell to members of your caucus from north of Highway 10?
Well, I would say north of Milwaukee it's a tough sell, but
okay.
I mean, if you do look at the impact that the team has on the state. I mean, I believe it's about $10 million simply in state taxes that we collect every year, and that's without the growth in the players' contracts. So, you know, if you take that out of the equation, if you take out the 2,700 jobs that are affiliated by the different businesses that support the Bucks,
mm-hmm.
And the economic impact, I believe, is around $100 million per year to the city. You take that out of the equation, and, you know, I think it's a concern. If it was, you know, in Fond du Lac when we stepped up and helped out the Mercury Marine to keep them in the state,
sure.
The legislature got involved.
Yeah.
I think this is a reasonable opportunity for us to get involved. It just has to be, the deal has to make sense.
When people start looking at, okay, what if they leave? And what if we don't take this opportunity? Then I think you get more people engaged. Because this is a really fabulous opportunity for not only the city of Milwaukee, but the whole state. I mean, Milwaukee is the biggest hub in our state. And as Milwaukee goes, so does the state. And I think in this time, and the idea of having a major team leave Milwaukee and say, Milwaukee just couldn't get their act together. The state of Wisconsin just couldn't get their act together. When there are so many other cities who would love to have a basketball team and the development that comes with it. And the owners have the experience, along with John Hammes, to do some really exciting developments that are mixed use, are retail and office and apartments and restaurants. It's a very exciting opportunity we have, and this part of the city needs a lot of help. Milwaukee's a beautiful city. If you think of the lake, the river, our architecture, our arts, our culture, it's really a fabulous city. But we have a bit of a complex that we need to tout our strengths, and we need to look at the opportunity for the future. So I'm hoping we won't overlook this.
This is going to be part of the budget, right? It doesn't have to move earlier. It's going to be part of the budget.
I don't know that. I think that's to be debated. We're not going to take anything for granted. I think this is a part of the debate.
Okay. The issues don't get any easier. Transportation funding. You asked the transportation secretary, what about an $800 million bonding package? Mm-hmm. Is that where your caucus is, or were some members of your caucus, or has that idea been thrown aside, John?
No, I think the reason I asked for that is I wanted our members to have a clear understanding if we don't approve the level of the bonding that the governor has asked for and go back to a more conservative number, more in line with perhaps what has been done in the last few budgets, mm-hmm. you know, what would that look like? So I think that's important to have that information. But, you know, to the governor's credit, he has reduced overall bonding quite a bit in this budget. Unfortunately, he is relying on bonding for transportation. I think the members in our caucus want to have this discussion about the long-term sustainability of the transportation fund and what we can do to shore it up. But, those numbers, when you look at the investment in the zoo interchange and other projects in Southeast Wisconsin, which mm-hmm. are really already started, and it's difficult to put a halt to those, if we do make reductions to the bonding, where is that going to impact? And most of it, I think over 80% of it comes from outstate Wisconsin. And I think legislators need to have an understanding of what decisions are actually are on the table.
Yeah, I think most people thought, good, we can cut the projects in Milwaukee or southeastern Wisconsin. And what John's paper has done is shown projects would be cut all over the state.
Yes.
And so when people go, oh, I thought it was going to be not in my backyard, when they look at this being postponed, when they look at how much will it cost later, how what accidents can happen, do I want that on my watch? I think people become more serious about looking at our transportation needs, which are all over the state. And the longer we put off decisions, the more costly they become now and in the future.
I think there's a perception with transportation funding in Wisconsin as well. There's a perception problem. We have one of the highest gas tax in the country. I think it's the highest in the Midwest. But if you look at overall funding for transportation, dollars per mile, mm-hmm. when you consider registration fee, title fee, all the different things that states collect for transportation, we're actually the lowest in the Midwest per mile. So I think there needs to be an education process with the public. To be quite honest, it has to start with legislators understanding, how we fund it and how we compare, because I think transportation is an important part of our economic infrastructure to grow our economy.
And getting people to work is really significant. As you can see where the roads go, then it becomes more accessible for people to get to work, for companies to build and develop their opportunities. So it's not as easy as saying let's have less bonding, let's postpone projects. Those projects are all over the state, and Wisconsin depends on its infrastructure to get people to work.
Do you think the final package will have to include some uppers, either the $75 annual fee? Now, Senator Fitzgerald, it says no way to the gas tax, but that's been a few weeks. Is he still saying that?
Well, what the governor has said, and I think it's true, that if we have uppers, we've got to have downers
elsewhere,
somewhere.
Right?
And I think that's a package we could put together. But John is right. When you look at our funding package for transportation, when we decided to take the gas tax off and not index it.
2006,
yeah,
yes.
Our need went up and our revenues went down. So we really had a collision course, and we have to deal with that collision course. And we have to look at the revenues. No one wants to raise revenues, that's
right.
For sure. And people say, yeah, we want better roads. We don't want potholes, but we don't want to pay for it out of our pocket.
What my members are saying is we'd rather find ways to pay for it today than have our children pay for it down the road. And they're faced with those decisions, what those might look like. They might have a different perspective, but that's where we're at right now, is we at least want to do the research to provide options for our members to decide what they feel is best for our state moving forward.
And I think the Senate agrees. We'll either look at delaying projects, we'll look at raising revenues, and we'll look at a combination of the two. But we have to look at the future. And most states bond over 25, 30 years. That's the life of a road. And so we can't expect one generation to pick up the load for all these projects at the same time. Unfortunately, these projects are all coming to fruition at the same time.
Yes.
So those leaders in our state at that time said, you know, we really need to grow our infrastructure. We need to do what's right for our safety and to get people to work. So they made that investment, so it's up to us to figure out what are we going to do to continue getting people to work in a safe way.
At this biennium, we're bonding at 991 or 993. Mm-hmm. Could you foresee that same level of bonding in the budget you're about to vote on, co-chairs?
I think everything's on the table right now, so okay. I don't think we want to put ourselves, at least I don't want to, put ourselves in a box, because we're trying to get our members to look at the three options and to seriously talk about, do we want to kick the can down the road, or do we want to address short-term some issues that can begin us on the right course.
Everybody is hoping that the May numbers, tax collection numbers, GPR numbers, gives you some a windfall.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a windfall, what should be first drawn that windfall? Should it be K-12? Should it be cutting back on the proposed $300 million cut to the UW? First draw,
I think we agree it has to be K-12.
K-12.
People in both houses, and I think Republicans and Democrats agree, we need to fill the first year hole, and we need to make sure that education isn't cut the second year. So that's definitely in everybody's best interest. I think we've got to make some investment in economic development and jobs, too. The governor puts $100 million in job development and workforce development, but we need to get some wheels going with entrepreneurs and new ideas with partnerships with universities and businesses. I know like the Water Council in Milwaukee is doing tremendous work to generate new jobs and jobs for the future. They're at capacity, so we need to grow that. I know that UWM has an innovation park that they're really interested in to grow engineering and engineering opportunities. We have a lot of good partnerships with our university system that we need to grow for sustainable and high-paying jobs.
K-12 will be the definite first draw.
Okay.
If you look back to last budget, first of all, I mean, where the governor's at in this equation is, I mean, especially this time around where his budget was introduced early, he doesn't have the benefit of having the re-estimates like we do.
Right.
And I think because of that, you know, he made some difficult decisions. I think first and foremost will be K-12, as we did last time, put an additional $300 million into K-12 in the last budget. I think that'll be the top priority this time around as well.
When I go, though, to the Department of Revenue website and I look at GPR tax collections from July through the end of February, that's an eight-month period. They're only up 0.2%. So here's my question. If there's no windfall, will you have any choice but to go with the governor's original spending plan? I mean, what happens if there's no additional windfall?
If there's no additional windfall, we have some really tough decisions to make. But I'm estimating that we are going to have increases in revenues. Everything we've seen to date indicates that we are going to have some increases. What the amount is undetermined. But, you know, we have to remember, we made a $2 billion investment in our taxpayers when we gave back that money to our taxpayers. And people have to remember that we did that. And that is, some people say you never should have given that money back because look at you now. But giving that money back is going to help grow the economy. And it's starting to happen. And I think we need to invest in our taxpayers so that they can have an opportunity. So we have to remember we made that huge investment, which everybody liked.
Well, and also, you have to realize, too, that our revenues aren't really the problem. Our revenues are at high. We've got a more revenue than we had. So the issues are the cost of our programs. And the number one, it's not one of them, it's the number one, this is the third budget in a row I've been involved with, that we'll have all three budgets will have put about $2.7 billion of new money into our Medicaid program.
Right.
And you couldn't compare that to, expense line in our budgets that have been anywhere close to that type of new growth.
According to Bob Lang, 63% of all new GPR tax collections in 2015-2017 is going to go to
MA. That's correct.
And that's a commitment we have made to our citizens who cannot help themselves in the field of health and mental health. But you know what? We need to be more efficient and cost-effective in health care, and we can. I think we're looking at family care and the budget. Family care is making changes that will be more cost-effective because the trend line is going way, way up, taking all of our new resources, as you said, not all, but like 63%, which is significant. So if this trend line keeps going, we will not have new money for education. We will not have new money for higher ed. We will not have new money for transportation. So we have to look at how can we develop programs that meet the needs of those who need us, but how can we do it in a more cost-effective way where we have better health outcomes?
Good.
John, I don't think I gave you a chance to answer the question. If there's no additional money,
I was comfortable with Alberta's answer. Actually, you know, the Medicaid issue, I just want to, Alberta brought up family care, and the DHS has got a proposal dealing with family care, IRIS,
senior care.
I think it's disability resource centers. I think it's the intention of both caucuses, but where we get, we're not sure, is to try and maintain senior care. When it comes to family care and IRIS, there's not a lot of detail in the plan at this point in time, but I think it's our intent. You know, we don't want to make a decision without all the information, but we also don't want to hamstring the Department of Health Services to be able to produce some reforms that are actually going to really save these programs long term. Because
exactly.
You know, with the demographic shifts that we are seeing in our state, mm-hmm. aging population, we're going to have to get our hands around the cost of the family care and the IRIS program to be able to maintain it for those that need it in the future. And at the same time, one of the proposals that isn't getting a lot of attention in the DHS proposal is bringing the health side, you know, healthcare management of the data, you know, doctor's appointments and hospital visits and all that is into the whole equation and managing those costs as well. And just for the sake of the health of those people that are on those programs, it makes sense to manage all their healthcare needs together.
And make sure that you have a evidence-based approaches that really work, and also evaluate outcomes, because many times we're throwing money at healthcare programs that aren't getting the outcomes they need to get. And that would be in the best interest of the consumer and the patients and the best interest of the taxpayer.
You don't sound convinced, though, that you're right now willing to go along with the governor's changes in senior care, family care, and IRIS, and aging and disability resource centers.
Our job is to put...
It only saves 21 million GPR,
yes,
according to Bob Lang's
fiscal... That's right.
Excuse me.
Our job is to have our input on this. So it's very interesting that everybody, I think, is really engaged in family care, because when we went around to the public hearings, that was really the number one issue,
yes,
and two was very tied in a close second with K-12. So we heard loud and clear that people were concerned about their family services, their family care services, and they did not want to lose those benefits. But I think they would agree, they would work with us to have better access, better services, at a better cost.
And to be clear on family care and IRIS proposal, the reason it actually saves money in this budget is
yeah,
the dollars that are coming in from the seven counties that would be expanding family care. It's this county match that would be coming in. Long-term savings would not be in this budget. It would be in future budgets. So,
right.
I mean, I think where we're at right now is we're going to tell DHS, you know, we need a firm plan before we're ready to move forward, and I think that's probably the direction we're going to head.
But I think that's a great opportunity for the legislature to say we've heard you, and we're going to lead too. And I think the governor welcomes that, because that's our job, and we're not afraid to take on issues and change them if we think they'll be a better outcome.
I was intrigued yesterday when the governor again said giving the UW system autonomy makes sense, because you and Dean Knutson mm-hmm. put out a statement saying that's just not workable.
I don't know that it doesn't make sense.
Okay.
I'm actually at the point where I think there's potential there.
Okay, but
I think,
not this time?
Well, but what do we know? what do we know in the autonomy or the UW authority would look like? Okay. I think that's the concern of all of our legislators on the Senate and the Assembly is what will that look like? Is there potential for them to better manage the system through an authority? Possibly. But I don't think we have enough information to be able to make that decision at this point in time. So my position is I would not support it.
I think in the Senate we are looking at the authority and we are looking at accountability and transparencies and better outcomes. So how we get better transparency, better accountability, having more students graduate on time. Let's face it, our university system has been building their faculty while our students have decreased significantly. So they're on a negative trend and it's unsustainable. So something's got to change. And we talk about procurement, about being, you know, waste in procurement or the dorms. There are a lot of ways we can save money on education. But the best thing we can do is build up our population to have more people with degrees in degree areas that are needed by the state, like engineering, tech, nurses, and other areas that we have great need.
I think there might be a difference here between the full UW authority, meaning separate, than autonomy. I mean, I think we're all in inflexibilities. I think we're all willing to look for things that make sense from a flexibility standpoint.
Yeah, and we're really working together to try to come up with some solutions that could work, because we know these cuts are very tough for the UW system. But we know they could manage more effectively. So how do we get to that meeting of the mind where they have more authority to manage more effectively? We get the better outcome of more students getting their degrees in the areas we need in 4 years at a cost that's affordable.
But the authority proposal that the governor announced February 3rd is not going to be, you don't expect it to be part of joint finance budget, correct?
I don't believe I've got the support on my side.
I can't say that because I think we're still working through it. We have to look for where can we get the best outcome.
The Regents last week, as you know, approved tuition increases on non-residents and internationals and grad student, some of the specialized schools. Are you both comfortable with those tuition increases? Because Senator Nass is not.
Well, you know, if you look at it, it makes sense because our non-resident tuition is one of the lowest in the country, and it's one of the highest in demand for a public institution. A lot of my students in my district cannot get into UW in Madison, and they're very upset that all these students are coming in from around the world and around the country. So my district would support an increase, not on their non-residents, but on non-residents. They would support that because they think they should contribute more to the effort. But I know it's very controversial.
You know, I'm supportive. If you look at what somebody coming, you know, reciprocity, for example, with Minnesota, it's more cost effective for somebody from Minnesota to send their child to one of our schools than to stay at home.
Exactly.
You know, there's a problem there. I mean, this is the UW University of Wisconsin system. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, our kids need to be protected.
Exactly.
And if long-term sustainability of the UW system means that we might charge folks from another country or another state a little bit more, then I think that's a step in the right direction.
Plus a lot of these students, non-residents, do not stay in our state, and we have to make sure more of our educated students stay in the state, and we have to figure that out ourselves, because a lot of our students are leaving because they can't find jobs here. But I think when you look at the non-resident student and how they come here, take our great education and leave, I think that's pretty upsetting to a lot of our taxpayers who feel like they're putting in a lot of their money and they're not getting their kids in.
Five of the campuses have announced buyouts. The UW Oshkosh is dropping the tennis team. Are you satisfied with some of these potential cuts that the campuses are announcing?
Well, I mean, they're managing themselves, and I think that's kind of a step towards autonomy, you know, where they're making the decisions that are right for their campuses. You know, what business out there has never gone through this type of discussion where they need to, you know, circle the wagons and say, okay, what makes sense here? What should stay? What's our priorities? And what maybe should go? So I think it's good for them to have those discussions. And some of the chancellors I've talked to may not necessarily admit it publicly. Some probably would, but it's a good discussion to begin to have because it forces them to take a look at their system and what really the priority of what their priorities are. So and perhaps maybe, you know, early retirement, those aren't necessarily new ideas that the business community doesn't look at all the time and bring in, you know, fresh educators. I think it's a I applaud them for taking those steps, even though we're not at the end of the budget yet. You know, my guess is even if we came back tomorrow and said, you know, $300 million, waved our magic wand and said the $300 million cuts is gone, a lot of those campuses would probably still head down some of those same directions because it was a good process that for them to take.
You know, I think some of the chancellors have told us confidentially they figured out how to deal with the cut. You know, maybe they're in a better position than some of the other chancellors. But, you know, I think those who are rolling up their sleeves and trying to figure it out, and if you figure it out the first year, you really are ahead of the game because you don't have to figure it out again the second year. And those cuts are really important. But look at all the faculty they have. And I think the goal should be to be able to keep the really, really good, high-demand faculty who are adding value added to our students. But there are a lot of faculty who want to go on and do something else, so God bless them. You know, maybe this is a good time to change careers or go to a different campus.
Of all the issues that we talked about, what do you think will be the most difficult to resolve? The one that will keep us here at 2 a.m. on the last day joint finance meet? Will it be transportation or will it be some of...
I believe it will be transportation.
Transportation.
Yeah, because transportation doesn't have the same constituency that K-12 and higher ed has.
Okay.
We have all of our constituents, you know, really concerned about those two areas along with family care. Transportation is a policy issue that we really are pretty alone on. I mean, people don't like potholes. They don't like having detours in their highways when they're going to work. But if you ask them, where does transportation fall on your priority scale, it would not be 1, 2, or 3. So, but public policy-wise, we know that infrastructure is one of our very biggest challenges and responsibilities. So we have to figure out how do we change the curve.
Do you have a deal with the governor that your budget will not spend any more GPR than the one he recommended on February 3rd?
There's been no such deal.
No.
No such deal?
No, we always try to make sure we spend less than the governor. we try to bond less than the governor. That's our goal, to show how we can do it better. That's our job. But I think this budget's really challenging, but all of us really want to be committed to making Wisconsin more affordable. So I think some of the reforms that are in the budget are really good. They're not going to be hugely visible to the average citizen, but they will make a difference in how state government operates in terms of efficiency.
Will the joint finance budget be one that the governor can run for president on, John?
That's his call. I mean, I think he's already had the opportunity to present his budget, right?
Yes.
You know, so this is his document at this point in time, but by the...
Are you guys going to help him?
Our focus is the 56,000 people in the assembly that elect us and send us here to work on their behalf, and I think
absolutely.
The Senate would...
We feel the very same way.
That's times three, right?
And that's why we have the same constituency, so we have a meeting of the minds. But I think, compared to other budgets, I feel like we're more together on what the priorities are and what some of the solutions are. And so I think you're going to see us agreeing more and coming together more. There's some issues that are going to be really rough, like school accountability. I'm not going to be Pollyanna.
Is that going to be rolled in?
It's in right now.
Yeah, so it would take an act, an affirmative vote to take it out.
Right.
Is it going to stay in then? Let me rephrase the question.
Stay tuned.
But you know, another issue that I think we're in agreement is on the report card. We all agree that we need a report card. But we think we're doing okay when we said, let's put everybody on the public dollar in on the report card. That means public schools, charter, choice. You know, but I think this issue of having A, B, C, D is not something that we want to change right now, since we had a standard of accountability that we seem to think was working. Because in my district, John, I don't know about yours, when that report card comes out, people really hop to it and say, how did our schools do?
I'm in favor of letter grades. I mean, I think it's kind of ironic that people that, you know, grade our kids with letter grades are afraid of letter grades themselves. But that's, you know, that's one of those opportunities for disagreement.
Okay.
And discussion and debate.
Final question, the date that joint finance finishes its work on the budget? Target date?
Target date is
Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Memorial Day.
And I know we're going to make it.
Okay.
We make our goals when we work together. It might take a lot of effort at the end, but I think we're making the effort at the beginning to say, what are our priorities? Then what do we need to change? What do we hear from the people? And with new revenues, we're not saying we're going to have a lot of new revenues. That'll give us opportunities to make some changes that we, I think, all can approve.
Thank you very much. Senator Alberta Darling, Representative John Nygren, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.